Welcome in. More college football all the time, always. Really cool, Brent. A couple weeks coming up, I think, on the show. We're going to get several coaches, Matt Rhule. We're going to get Joey McGuire, who's doing some cool things with Texas Tech, which I'm interested to talk to him about. Strategery. That is a word, yes. Strategery.
That's your word.
Yeah, and how he's been building the program, which I think is going to be really, really fun to watch. And then Todd McShay, because the draft is – the combine is next week. Yep. Daniel Jeremiah, who's another stud when it comes to the draft. We'll get him post-combine to hear all the risers, the movers, and the shakers. But today I think we got some pretty cool topics. Who's the next Ryan Day? Like the next coach that breaks through that we've been talking about probably for years, maybe not hating on as much as Ryan Day, because Ryan Day got hated upon pretty bad. So – that next guy that's going to win a championship. And I put a list together. How many guys do you have on your list, Brent?
Five.
Okay. And that's Brent Rollins, by the way, rival, PFF contributor. We do this several times a week, every week. Where do you want to kick it off, big fella?
Well, I think we should go with probably the team that you put in your preseason numero uno ranking, because I bet he's on your list.
Yeah. He's super high on the list. He actually just got a raise too, by the way. Did you see that?
I have not seen that actually. I didn't know. I didn't see that.
$12.3 million a year. Like,
so is he right under Day in terms of money? And I know it's close.
He's getting absolutely broke off. Again, Texas finds that in their stocking caps, you know, that they put on in the winter, just because there was an extra, you know, 15, 20 million in the bank. So I don't blame him. I would sign Sark. His NIL and recruiting has been ridiculous. Two Final Fours. We talked about a lot of this last time. He's a play calling wizard. The interesting thing about Sark is he designs so much offense and so many cool things that he's one of those play callers that doesn't like to repeat plays, because I think he has endless creativity. And so to put him with Texas with those funds, to me, obviously makes a lot of sense. I got them number one starting right now for next season. So Sark was one on my list.
Who else who are we going this back and forth? Or let's snake draft it. I went, so that's one. Who's two for you?
Dan Lanning is number two. Lieutenant Dan, you've seen the passion from Dan. Dan Lanning has Oregon, so he has the resources, again, like Texas does. Their NIL is going to be sweet. They're building a brand that's sweet. He comes into the Big Ten a year ago and wins against everyone, goes undefeated in conference play during the season, wins the Big Ten. And I think we've seen the recruiting classes have continued to gone up. The transfers, great job of plucking, finding, playing, a la their quarterback, wide receivers, a bunch of them the past couple years to have success. Dan Lanning is still in his 30s. I think we forget that. But that dude's going to get a chip soon. It's just a matter of time.
And now he has a QB that was a highly touted guy in Dante Moore, and that's kind of the next – I mean, he's had good, you know, Bo Nix was obviously a first-round pick, and Gabriel last year, but those were transfer guys. Now he's got sort of that young guy that he's had there in the system already a year, maybe build with and keep for consecutive seasons. I think that's
– you know what I like about both of those guys too is I really like having a head coach that is recruiting mindset one – but that is so good on their side of the football. Like, I didn't look at Oregon's defense and find a bunch of guys that I thought were first-round draft picks, but you always love their defense because they played with energy, passion, physicality. Like, they played smart. They played with their brains. And, you know, like, Sark's an elite offensive mind. Dan Lanning, elite defensive mind. Like, knows how to work his players into a system, even if it's not the best players. And that's what I love about great coaches, and that's why those guys are one and two on my list, because I know one side of the ball will always be taken care of. Now, listen, they ran into the buzzsaw that is Ohio State, but everyone did. So, but I just – his energy, his passion is contagious. It's infectious. He's an awesome dude, and in that spot, I think, you know, Cristobal had a lot of pub. Chip Kelly brought in a lot of good things, made a national championship appearance. I think Dan will be the one to get it done.
And, you know, bonus points for coming on this show previously. I think that,
yeah, baby.
I mean, I think that definitely puts him up even like a little edge over some of these others who maybe would like to join the show and kind of have fun and talk. But next one I had was Marcus Freeman.
Yeah, baby.
Because now the quarterback question is kind of a thing now for Notre Dame after 2 years or consecutive years of having the transfer guys with Hartman and then Riley Leonard, but still a very young team that Notre Dame had and one that could very much see itself back into the playoff and back into this championship picture next year. But I also think he's making Notre Dame likable in a way. He's making Notre Dame likable from a recruiting standpoint, and they're starting to build momentum in that realm. And now it's kind of, okay, that's a in place to go to again, I think.
Yeah. And I think his personality, you know, he's intense, but he's confident, but he's poised. Like, he's got a cool demeanor about him that's very unique and very different. Three AP top five wins and a national championship appearance. Notre Dame had two of those wins from 1999 to 2021. So he did that in his 3 year run twice already, or three times already, excuse me. So that's pretty big deal. Seven top 25 wins last year, 14 in his 3 years. Brian Kelly had 14 in 7 years. So, like, just for, you know, context when it comes to Brian Kelly's a great coach. Like, he's a really good coach, and he might be on this list as well for you. I don't know if he is or not, but like, it just shows you Marcus Freeman, who's still in his 30s. Again, he's still a young guy. You know, he's found a way to get people to believe in, buy in, be physical, be tough. I think the recruiting will, you're right, continue. But I was more impressed with the development, the coaching. Now, he's got to replace OCD, or he's got to replace his DC, which is hard to hire great coaches over and over again and hit home runs with those guys.
Yeah.
But I do think he deserves to be high on this list because of, you know, what he just did and what he's building and what he's been able to do in his 3 years in South Bend.
So that was mine. So you next. Who was next on your list?
I got one that I don't think you'll have on your list. Kalen DeBoer. Do you have Kalen DeBoer on your list?
No, and I think because of the first season and not making the playoff in the first season, he's now kind of an under-the-radar coach, even though he's won literally everywhere he's been.
Yeah. So. I mean, he's won at an elite level. And one thing that's kind of crazy when you look at Kalen DeBoer, you know, first, he's 34-7 as a head coach, which is stupid. I mean, that's really stupid. As a head coach in top tier Power Four programs, yeah. Now, obviously this year was several of his losses, you know, because they lost four this year.
Yes.
Five. They lose five this year.
Four.
Yeah. Four. So that's a big part of it. Kalen DeBoer is obviously at Alabama. Obviously, following Nick Saban is a tough thing to do, not easy, but it's also a great place to be because you've got endless resources. You've got the culture, or you've got the unbelievable history. Like,
the brand.
You're not going anywhere. Like, it's been built already. It's a juggernaut. People have looked at this program as the premier program in college football for a long time. This is the first time they've lost four games since Nick Saban's first year, which is kind of crazy. So obviously I get the why it turned, but he's also 13-2 versus top 25 teams. 13-2. Like, that is really, really stupid. And also, when you look at talking about big games, he's 6-1 versus top 10 teams. And here's another stupid stat, which has to go on here, Brent. Guess who? He's 7-0 versus these coaches.
Okay, Sark. Lanning.
Sark, Lanning, who are both on the list. Brian Kelly, who is another guy that's going to be on my list coming up. And Kirby Smart. He's 7-0. Like, that's pretty dang good, bro. Like, that show, and I think it's big. His getting his OC back, Ryan Grubb, that is a big deal for for him to have another guy that knows him intimately, knows his system, like makes him better for sure. And I think Kalen DeBoer is one of those coaches that I feel very comfortable putting on this list because of where he's at, his pedigree, and his ability to win a ton of big games so far in his career.
Alabama fans watching, they're probably like, yeah, but he went 0-1 against Vanderbilt. So, but no, I think that's an element of coming from the different conferences as you step up in competition, the week to week part of it, where you could potentially maybe not be dialed in as much and still be take care of business in other places. That doesn't really happen necessarily in the SEC. Mine was the coach who was number one on the list that we did earlier in the offseason about coaches with the most to gain that completely can change the narrative, and that's James Franklin. Because now that he has returning quarterback, he stole his biggest rival's defensive coordinator. He has his OC returning.
Yep.
Everything is kind of in place in a way to, you know, both of the running backs are back.
Yep.
And you might lose top five pick, but that's one where, and you think back to, he actually is going to be on this other list that you tweeted out earlier today about coaches that don't get necessarily enough credit. Like, he's done a lot of good things at Penn State. Like, they're in a really good place. He's just got one hurdle that he can't really get over right now, and that's Ohio State. But you think back to when he actually won and did things at Vanderbilt. Like, that's still there. But, no, he's one that, you know. Yeah, I will say this, though. If it's not next year.
When is it?
There's a lot to gain. There's a lot of pressure. It's a combination of both for him.
And I'm going to give you the other side of that coin. People are going to say hasn't won big games, which is right. True. It's absolutely a true statement. Brent, look up his record versus top five opponents because we just talked about
something.
Yeah, well, look it up real quick because we just talked about DeBoer and his big game prowess, 6-1 versus AP top 10 teams and 7-0 against great coaches. Like, you know, James Franklin is a guy that's lost those. And look at last year. They lost their three best games. Like, their three toughest games last year, they lost. And so you have to point to that. But I wrote down everything you said when it comes to they got their quarterback. They got their running backs. They got their OC, stud, DC, stud, check, check, check. Like, there's a lot of boxes that are already checked to go in that direction. The schedule next year, Nevada, FIU, Villanova, off. Great timing for the Oregon Ducks to have a bye week.
At UCLA, home, I think, right?
Northwestern, Iowa. Then you got at Ohio State, Indiana, Michigan State, Nebraska, Rutgers. Like, I know at Ohio State is going to be extremely tough. Obviously, it always is. Oregon will be tough. Bye weeks before both big games, not a surprise. That's how you should do it. You get 2 weeks to prepare, an extra week to get healthy, get your mind right, study for that opponent. But, I mean,
if they're not in the playoff schedule and in the top eight, it's a massive disappointment in terms of the season, yeah. I think.
Did you get his record, by the way, versus top opponents?
1-15.
Versus top five?
Yep.
Oof. God dang. 1-15? Jeez. Yeah. Okay. Well, that hurts even more if you're
a variety of a bunch of different stats that are not good, depending.
Well, on, and here's the thing:
when you look and how,
yeah,
good the Google results are.
Here's the thing too: like, if we're being honest, how many times did he really have the better roster? Like,
hasn't
not very rare. Many of those times. And he's built Penn State, like you said, he's done a really good job finding talent, even while recruiting against, you know, other juggernauts in their conference, and it didn't get any easier with Oregon coming in either. That didn't help them. But do you have anybody else on your list, or am I the only one left?
I mean, I think Sharon Moore might be an interesting one.
Okay, I like that one.
The funding that is now, and the, you know, what they're doing, and the dollar bills that are being spent, and also he is beating Ohio State.
2-0, because technically he got the win, remember, because Jim Harbaugh was suspended.
Yes, very much so. So I think that's, you know, and you mentioned Brian Kelly. I don't know if that's one that, I mean, I don't see it. Maybe this year's the year. Well, returning QB, but
I mean, don't know. Sherrone Moore, you didn't really sell me on Sherrone Moore, by the way. You gave me like a sentence, homie.
Well, I think it's resources, it's brand, it's recruiting that's still very much there. You're beating your biggest rival. It's a matter of, you know, hey, if you get this guy and he is your QB and you have sort of lights out QB play, now you're in a whole other world. Because I think that's, you're just going to see so much of that in college football now. Like we talked about Florida, you've got DJ Lagway. You feel really good about your quarterback for a couple years, and that might be your window. And then it's about, okay, reloading and or finding the next really good QB that can win you games and building around.
Well, and another thing, too, that's important to know, you know, the Bryce Underwood is the quarterback Brent was talking about.
Yeah, five-star kid.
They spent over $12 million to get him, which is crazy, but it's also something that will never happen again because as of July 1st, Brent, you'll have a $20 million cap.
Yeah.
Like, they've changed. So these coaches have been desperately wanting some form of a reform and some form of, like, please give us some kind of something that's not the wild, wild west, that's not just stupid and crazy. So you'll have a budget, actually, which you have to operate under, which will be interesting. But there's teams right now that are spending a shoot ton of money before they get to that point, which is really smart, by the way. Like, that's exactly – if I had it, I would be spending it like it's going out of style because, again, when July 1st comes, every dollar starts to matter. And I actually think, Brent, the way they're doing it, too, is it's under all the programs. So it's for football and for basketball and for baseball. So I think they all have to work together to keep underneath that number, which I think is how they're doing it, which is
going to be cool. I haven't read enough about that just because it's not here.
But
I'm waiting till it's like final and everybody says, and this is where it is. And now, okay, now we go. Now we understand.
Well, which is always the smart way to do it, Brent. That's what I always jump the gun and talk about things. And you're the, you know, think it through, process it kind of guy. All right. The only other guy I had on my list was Brian Kelly.
Yeah.
I think he deserves to be on the list. I think the portal class that they just brought in, I think LSU, every LSU coach, the last three, got it right. Saban, Les Miles and Ed Orgeron.
Go Tigers.
Yeah, go Tigers. all won national championships. So, and all did it by the end of year four. Brian Kelly, about to be in year four, right?
Ooh,
so
that bell didn't ring. I missed that one.
I mean, it's kind of crazy, ain't it? Like that's, yes. You know, LSU is this is not like a up and coming program. Like this program should be a freaking dynasty. Like this program should be elite every year. Maybe they don't win it all every year because nobody's going to win it all every year, but LSU should be a great team. And going into the portal, Brian Kelly has more wins than any other active coaches, but he hasn't beaten a top five team since COVID. So I know COVID feels like 7,000 years ago because it was so poorly handled, but it's been a while. They had some really good moments a year ago, but I think the thing that gives me the most pause about this, Brent, is end of the games, man, just finding ways to lose. They do a good job of that. Like they have to do better.
It's not something to be good at.
Yeah. I mean, they've got to do a better job of finding ways to win and win ugly and take care of business. But having Nussmeier showed me enough last year at flashes to say he's the best QB in the SEC, like 100% did. But then he went and he fell off a cliff and turned the ball over too much. They didn't have a running game. They weren't balanced enough, but they went into the portal, got the best transfer portal class in the country, spent some money. They should be better. That this should be much improved, and LSU should be a team that's on a short list every year. They should not be going – if their last three coaches have won national championships, they should be
the
in
next
that
guy should be on – yes, exactly. I agree. And Sean is a double podcast listener who also happens to listen to Family Goals that says you're just trying to get on Pastor Jay's good side.
Well, I appreciate that.
By the way, I you know what the most important thing for LSU is, I think, this year?
Starting fast?
Going 1-0.
Yeah.
Because they haven't been 1-0 in these opening games, seemingly, for a while. So.
And they play Clemson.
Yes, and it's a big one for them.
And Clemson is in my top five coming back next year with their weapons coming back with a new DC. Like, you better watch out because the Tigers on Tigers violence should be really, really good.
Jeffrey would rather have Nuss over Arch for this season.
Okay, Brent, if I asked you that question, would you rather have Nussmeier or would you rather have Arch Manning? Who would you rather have?
Give me Arch. Sorry. I disagree.
Really?
I think he's going to be really good.
Is it because of the system or is it because you think he's a bit more talented?
I just, the talent part and the running part, the running element to me with him just is a different element. So
I'll be interested now, to see
early versus late. That maybe early it's Nuss and later it's the other, but yeah, I think he's going to be really, really good.
I'd be interested to see Sark because Sark, he's not a run his quarterback guy. Right. Like he doesn't major in that. And I'll be interested to see how he minors in it. Like, I think you don't have to major in it, but man, oh man, when you get me the going this way and going that way, like he likes to do, and then add in the QB run element, like you can really get my head spinning. And I would be surprised if he didn't use that. And we know he'll use it short yardage situation because Arch is also a big, strong kid. I mean, he's strong and he's fast. And I saw enough deep balls last year. But, man, Nussmeier's a stud, man. Now, listen, if you turned on his turnover tape, you'd be like, what the flip are we doing? Like, what are you doing on that play? What are you doing on that play? There's a couple decisions a game that I'm like, Broseph, like, we've got to get the crap out of here. That is not going to cut it. And then there's several plays a game that I'm like, he's falling away, you know, feet barely set, and he slings it sidearm off of an RPO that's just gorgeous. And you're like, that was unique.
Somewhat in thinking about Stetson Bennett as Georgia's quarterback in 2021, where 2-3 times a game, it would be a what on earth are you doing decision. And then in 2022, he elevated himself to where, especially in the big games, at least he kind of, I think maybe coasted in some of those other games, but especially in the big games, he was dialed in, and especially from a decision-making standpoint. So, all right. So those are the coaches in terms of next up. Now we're going to kind of look at some teams and teams who are off the radar and you need to kind of think about them. And there's a lot of things to like about them going forward. So I have a list of 1, 2, 3, 7 teams that are maybe possibles here. And
I'm going to be super interested in this, Brent, because like I'm going to be super interested in your definition of off the radar, because mine and your definition of off the radar might be different. So, you know, I
have 1, 2, 3 of these are teams that had losing records last year.
Okay, sweet. Fire away.
All right. So first one I think is not as much off the record. Finish strong, winning the bowl game, Illinois. With Altmyer returning, Bielema at head coach. For me, like I looked at returning QB coach combo, and did you add experience, and is your team a grown-up team basically? Are you one of those college basketball teams that's, you know, 6 of the first 7 guys are seniors or, you know, upperclassmen type deal? And with all these teams, you look up and down their depth chart and it's redshirt senior, redshirt junior, transfer senior, that kind of thing. So Illinois is one for me, and their schedule.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. I want you to tell me how many games Illinois won last year.
10.
So that's an off the radar team. That's
they lower 20s ranked. But that was that's the lone double digit win team.
But I'm just like, that's where
they weren't a non-playoff team.
No, I could have put them in South Carolina in that mix. Like, to me, those are two. Like,
yeah.
South Carolina. That's who they beat.
Bowl game. Didn't they beat them in the bowl game, right? Yeah.
Yes, they beat them in the bowl game, correct. Like, I could have put them both in, like, teams that are off the radar, but I feel like both of them last year was like, whoa, look at me. Like, and what you just said is huge. Lenora Sellers at South Carolina, the QB, enormous, big deal. Luke Altmyer balled last year. Like how many times, Brent, did we come on here and be like, oh my gosh, like TD passes and not turning the football over? Like Illinois, like Bielema did a good job. He kind of reinvented himself. I mean, because it was always run the ball, run the ball, run the ball. And they, They threw the ball when they needed to. They threw the ball. You know, he was just good. Luke Altmyer was really, really good. I was very surprised to watch him because he's got enough athletic ability and he's got decent size, but his touchdown, 22-6 TD to interception ratio was really, really stupid and completed a high percentage of his passes. I mean, I was impressed that they looked like that the passing game was so good, because it's usually Bielema, big, ugly guys up front, the big boys that just create pass, they run the football, and that's how they win.
Yep. So next on my list, I'll go to a team that had a losing record, Virginia Tech.
Okay.
Kyron Jones comes back, Pry again. Now, and a big reason for this is, like, obviously portal and experience. Like, a lot of their team is back. And most all the teams that I list here, it's QB back and it's just experience out the wazoo in a lot of the places. But their schedule, like, they have South Carolina at home and Vandy, or I think South Carolina is actually maybe a neutral site game initially, but it's on like the Sunday, Labor Day, the opening weekend. It's not the Saturday, but the Sunday game. And then they have Vanderbilt, so two SEC teams. And then it's the ACC schedule. And they get Miami at home. Like, that, I just look at their schedule and
they could beat last year. Remember the Hail Mary.
Right. Like, could they be a, if they somehow get both of those games in the beginning, could they be a 8 or 9 win team and maybe even, get hot and go somewhere else and go a little heavy, a little higher? Maybe. So that's my next one.
Yeah. And I wrote down, about a week ago or whatever, they hired Tulsa head coach as their OC, Philip Montgomery. Yeah.
Philip Montgomery.
And he's been at Baylor. He's been at Auburn. He's been at Houston. Remember, he had that Tulsa team back in 16 that was like the 3,000-yard passer and then two 1,000-yard rushers and two 1,000-yard receivers. Like, it was crazy, freaky good. It's the same thing with Virginia Tech. It seems like forever, the offense, right? Like, the inconsistency from the quarterback play. And last year they messed around with the QB. I remember them losing to Vanderbilt early and you're like, nobody's playing good at QB. Like, and that continued kind of throughout the season and until the very end of the season. Then they beat Virginia to go to a bowl game because they always beat Virginia. I think they're 22-2, Brent, off the top of my head, versus Virginia in the last 24 matchups. Like, they always beat him, and Pop came in at quarterback, right? Didn't they? Pop came in at quarterback, I think, and won the game. So, like, is the quarterback situation settled? They have an OC now, I think, which is a good thing. Like, they got somebody that is a proven commodity calling plays, and so I like that. I like that one if they get that offensive side of the ball consistency figured out.
Okay. Next on the list, TCU. Josh Hoover coming back at QB. Sonny Dykes, obviously, coach. 9-4 a year ago. The only part that I struggled with this one a little bit, and their roster is very experienced, a lot of additions in the transfer portal, is three of their first four games at North Carolina in Chapel Bill's opening
Bill game. Okay, I like what you did there. Chapel Bill.
That's shout out, Wes. And then they get SMU game 3 and at Arizona State game 4. Like, so if they're going to be somebody and you got to, if they have some early success, then you never know. So that's the next one for me.
They finished the year strong last year, which is a good thing.
Talent to the NFL. Lose, like the Williams kid, the receiver kid that I think is going to be picked decently high.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because I think you could put like 8 teams from the Big 12 on this list. It seems like
I have two others, actually. There are two others, and it's like, who comes out of, like, somebody's going to.
Yeah,
I think the whole thing could flip upside down outside of Arizona State.
Yeah, the Big 12, I think there's so much parity, so I think you can put so many teams in there. But you're right, the first part of the schedule, because, that's – if you're playing SMU, who went to the playoffs, Arizona State, who went to the playoffs, and North Carolina, that's a tough road. Like, that's a tough start, which is, I just don't see them. I don't see winning. I don't see them going undefeated. I see them losing probably two of those more than anything else. Now, again, can you rally and continue to play well? So that's not, it's not a horrible one, but they got Colorado after that too. But
Next out of the Big 12 is Baylor.
I like and that one. Thing,
with Sawyer Robertson coming back at QB, Aranda finished strong, and then they get Auburn in week one.
They host Auburn too, right?
Yeah. Yep.
So they host Auburn, who could be on this list, by the way. I don't know if you have them on your list or not, but
no.
Host Auburn, who's, you know, I would say they did as well as anybody in the portal to revamp their offense. I mean,
yes.
High recruits across the board with Jackson Arnold, Cam Coleman was already a baller. Malcolm Simmons was already a baller, but you had a couple of offensive linemen with Chaplin and Murphy, and then you added the receivers with Singleton and Fields. Like, Auburn's offense has no excuses this year. Like, no excuses. And so that game, if they can win that one, remember, Baylor started 2-4, and it looked like Dave Aranda was done. Like,
yeah,
it looked like he was going to get ran out of town. And then they went at eight. They ended up with 8 wins, and one of those losses, remember, to Colorado was, oof. That was a hard one to swallow when you had that game won. So I like another Big 12 team because you could
also play SMU. More. By the way,
yeah,
I'll throw the last Big 12 team out just because we're going to be. You mentioned their coach that we're going to be talking to next week. So Texas Tech and what they've done in the portal. Like, there's a great article. I think Max Olson wrote about their strategy, and you know, some teams are coming after their GM, that sort of stuff. James Blanchard, that's the GM guy for them, and they've loaded up in the portal and you know have their quarterback back in Morton. So they're the other ones. Like, okay, one of these three in the Big 12 maybe battles Arizona State for supremacy there.
Yeah, and when you say loaded up, they got 17 new players in December. 17. And no. 7 of them in the transfer portal top 75. Like, they had I think they were ranked
one of the top
they were ranked second in transfer portal classes of everybody in the country. And it's Texas Tech. And it's not like they were going, like, they got some guys from, you know, the Dakota States, and they got some good players off the grid, but they got players like Quentin Joyner, who was a baller at USC. Like, that dude was a stud. Yeah. You watched him run the football. He was really, really good. And then they had also guys that literally were going to make other visits. Like Reggie Virgil was a receiver out of Miami of Ohio that his next visits were Oklahoma, Florida State, and Florida.
Yeah.
But he went to Texas Tech and
got a
good deal. Went to Texas Tech. Like, other guys too, like UCF transfer Lee Hunter, defensive tackle. His next visit was Texas. Like, that's not a small school. They went in the portal and got some dudes, man. Like, they did a great job. And it's Cody Campbell, who is their billionaire backer, who was like, hey, bro, I'm spending $5 million in December. They built their program, by the way, to the transfer portal. Like, Coach Joey McGuire was very, very clear. He was like, we knew we had to change. They had a good season last year. They won 9 games. Like, they weren't horrible by any stretch. They couldn't stop a nosebleed, especially through the air. God, dog, bro. Like, they couldn't have stopped our youth league team. It was really, really bad in the secondary at times. But they still won a bunch of games. They still had some all-conference performers. I think 5 of them, but 4 of them were transfers. And they said, chips intermittent. Colorado did it in our league. We're going to do it. And ended up spending way more than $5 million, spent a ton of money.
Double that, I think.
Yes, they spent over $10 million to bring in a squad to say, like, we're trying to compete. Like, we're not just comfortable winning 9 games, which I got some respect because they've already spent, like, almost $250 million on facilities the last 3 years. Like,
yes,
I love it, man. If I'm a Texas Tech fan and I'm a Red Raiders fan, dude, Lubbock is already a tough place to play, Brent. Brent, when you go there, dude, you will see some funness. I'm talking about dressed up, dancing, partying like crazy. Like, it's a great, raucous, cool atmosphere, man. Spending the budget. Joey McGuire is a great coach with a great story. This is a fascinating team to me in the future.
Yep. So we'll hopefully get all that scheduled up and things worked out to where we're talking to him next week.
Yes.
Last two were Big Ten teams. And one of them, I like their schedule a lot better than the other. So Michigan State and Washington are the two. Both had losing records a year ago, but both returned their quarterback. Both have coaches who were new a year ago in Jonathan Smith at Michigan State, Jed Fish at Washington, that are now in year two. And both of these teams are added the bunch through the portal and are very experienced in terms of a lot of adults on the team per se. So like that's what I had in terms of that list. Anybody okay. else that you, that I missed?
Well, first of all, I love Washington. I love that. I love that pick because Demon Williams is a freshman QB who was one of the best yep. in the country, by the way. Like,
yeah, he was good.
Period. He was as a freshman. Yeah, I mean, he was really, really good. Really good. And you could see the athletic ability. Remember, new coach a year ago, a lot of a new system. They also got a running back in Jonah Coleman, who's an absolute how do I describe him? Like, I think bowling ball would be a good term. Like, I mean, just big old booty, like built low to the ground. He wears number one, a single digit, so it's slimming for him, but you know, he's like 5'9", 230. I remember watching the Indiana game, and I'm like, give that dude the ball. I remember watching the Michigan game. I'm like,
yeah.
There's not a lot blocked up well in front of him, and he still made plays. So, like, I think that combination – now, we don't know what the QB is going to be, but I saw him – I saw enough from Williams to say he's got some sick ability. And if and you know that you know the coach can coach. Like, I'm not yeah. concerned about that with the schedule. So, I like Washington. I like that one, too. Who else did I have on mine? I put Louisville on mine because I look at Louisville. There's a couple things that I love. First of all, everybody loves, if you don't love Jeff Brohm, you're not watching football. I mean, he's a yeah. really good, he's a great football coach.
He's going to score points. Like,
he's going to score points. Louisville was in the top 10 in points per game a year ago. But there's a kid last year, Isaac Brown, that I'm talking about, just dude popped off the tape. Like, he was a three-star kid, wasn't even ranked highly. He had over 1,100 yards a year ago, breaks tackles, even though he's not big. But dude is grease lightning, Brent. Like, he erased angles. I mean, I remember he deuced up Kentucky. He deuced up Clemson. He had a good game against Clemson. Like, he is speed to burn. They hired one of their own, Deion Branch, to coach wide receivers. They got a good wide receiver in the transfer portal a year ago in Colin Lacey, who was injured last year, who was, you know, at South Alabama, had over 1,300 yards. Like, I think he'll kick it in gear. Miller Moss, who came from USC. Yep. You should remember that name. He's the one who took care of LSU late in the game. Like, he's got some swag, man. He's tough. He'll hang in there. Like, I think him with Jeff Brohm. And then I looked at that schedule, Brent, like, at yeah. Miami.
The ACC.
First of all, Miami, at Miami scares no one. Like, that is not a hostile environment. They host Clemson. They dodge a lot of the ACC teams. I think they play SMU as well. Was it SMU?
Yeah, at SMU late.
Yeah, Clemson, at SMU back-to-back. At Miami, and then they got Clemson. I don't think there's any way that Louisville wins less than 10 games. I think Louisville will win 10 games. Okay. I think they'll be in the playoff picture. I think they're in the ACC, which, again, like the Big 12, it's a really good league to be in. Like, there's just not a lot of rosters that are going to overwhelm you. And I think they've got quarterback, head coach, weapons, running back, receiver, weapons that I think will put up a lot of points and be in a lot of games.
That's a good list.
Yeah. Solid. 18.
By the way, I think that's what's interesting about when you talk ACC, maybe not as much as what the Big 12. But the Big 12, those games every week, all those teams are quality football teams. It's not like it's an absolute stinker. Every team can beat you, and when you play each other consistently like those guys do and the coaches know each other, it's who buttons up and who takes care of the football, who does all the right things consistently week in and week out. So which of those three, we have two ACC? Yeah, two ACC, two Big 10, three Big 12, or three Big 10, sorry. Next one was a fun little comment that you tweeted today. Looking at coaches, and there was a lot of response, by the way. Just looking just now, it's like in,
I guess I should look at it.
628 responses. Who's a college football coach, past or present, head coach or coordinator that just doesn't get enough credit. So let me, I'm going to run through a bunch of the response. I'm going to run through the old coaches, the past coaches, and give me one that stands out to you. So a lot of people, obviously a lot of people from the Georgia side point out Irk Russell, the Georgia DC, and then at Georgia Southern. Gary Pinkwood, Mizzou, Paul Johnson, Frank Beamer, Don Nealon, West Virginia, Bill Snyder, Gary Patterson, Jerry Kill, Mike Riley at Oregon State, June Jones, got some mentions. Coach Donnan, Jimmy D, got some mentions. Bill Yeoman, who was the University of Houston guy, a long time old, sort of well back, but founder of the Veer offense. But the one for me that I thought was the most interesting, actually outside of Coach Donnan, because I love Coach Donnan, and
he's the man.
I stood like 10 feet from him when he got the national championship trophy when I was 12 years old. I was at the game. Somebody beside us put us on the field. So we're on the field celebrating after they win the national championship, but right there by him. But the one that was really cool for me was Steve Ensminger, that doesn't get enough credit as the 2019 LSU OC, because everybody points to Joe Brady and mentions his name first when he was the actual OC. A lot of mentions there for that one.
Okay.
Any of those stick out to you?
Yeah, one name stuck out, and it's Bill Snyder, because I don't think people understand how flipping terrible Kansas State was before he got there. Like, yep. And I've never – I covered Bill Snyder, and Brent, like the attention to detail is one of the coolest things you've ever seen. Like, he would literally – he would have every practice scripted out to a T. There are no slippage. Like, there is no, this didn't get done. He knew every ref and what their tendencies were and what they called. He wanted a place that was, quite frankly, miserable to win at and hard to win at, and was known for big games. But I just think the discipline, the toughness, the special teams, the defense, like, they always found ways to win games and win a lot of games that just didn't happen there. And built a program. He got offered to go to LSU. He could have gone to LSU. And I think if he does that, I think Bill Snyder's probably one of the greater coaches of all time, because I think he'd have won a ton of games. Like, he'd have won national championships out the yin yang. Like, he was that good of a coach that chose to stay in a spot that didn't have a lot of talent, that you had to be different. You had to be disciplined. You had to be tough. And his teams resembled him. And I don't know that there's a better program builder than what Bill Snyder did at Kansas State.
Yeah. Listening to Coach Fabris talk about John Fabris, former who coached under Bill Snyder and was Georgia and was your position coach, listening to the stories about him, it just echo everything you just said. Current. So there was the list. A lot of people went more past in terms of responses, just sort of looking at some of the current, a lot of people, I don't know if they were serious or if they were actually just maybe trolling a little bit, but put Bobo's name, Mike Bobo's name. I don't know, from a Georgia fan perspective, but other names, Coach Drink at Missouri, James Franklin, PJ Fleck, Jamie Chadwell at Liberty now, who's like, there was multiple comments like, how is he not a Power Four head coach yet?
Well, what he did at Coastal Carolina was unbelievable. I mean,
yes,
making the teal field colorful. The offensive innovation was one of the cooler ones I've ever seen. Like, the ability to blend like old school triple option with spread concepts, yes, and the way they passed the football was pretty incredible. I know one that I haven't heard you mention yet, but Mike Leach, was he on there?
A lot of people mentioned Leach. Yeah,
okay. I mean,
how he did it, the different programs, and basically won everywhere he was.
I mean, what he did at Texas Tech, what he did at Washington State, the innovation, the absolute comedic gold. I don't know that I've ever been around a funnier coach. Like, he literally was just dropping one-liners left and right. His weird infatuation with Pirates was the strangest thing I've ever heard. And, you know, had a sword in his, you know, in his office. And
I'm saying, did you get to interact with him pregame any?
Oh, dude, he was awesome. And his legendary story of what he did against Texas as the Texas Tech coach.
Oh,
with the play sheet.
Yes,
he literally
was Oklahoma then, right?
Was that he made a fake play sheet when they played Texas, and he walked.
I thought he was with Oklahoma though.
Yes, he was the OC of Oklahoma.
Yeah, that's right.
He was the OC of Oklahoma. He made a fake play sheet. He walked onto the field, had a GA drop it, literally, made sure the Texas people found it, and they did the absolute counterintuitive thing to everything that they was on the sheet, and they scored like 21 points out the gate like that. By the way, I texted Tom Rinaldi the other day, and he said he wanted to come on. He did that story with us at ESPN. That would be a great story to ask him about. Like, because I think he'll be another one like Palmer, where story time with him will be unbelievable. Because he's done all these stories. You know Tom Rinaldi. He's made you cry. He's made everyone cry. But he's also now Fox and this doing Super Bowls and stuff. But Mike Leach, 100%, was one of one. And innovative, run the football. Quotes about, you know, kids and their girlfriends and their fat little girlfriends. And like, I mean, he was fantastic. Hey, context though, for my Bill Snyder, by the way, I just looked this up. They hadn't won a conference title since 1934. They had four winning seasons in the previous 54 years, Brent. Four winning season. The program also hadn't won a game and they were 0-26 when he took it over. And you think about Snyder and what he built and consistently winning 10 games, winning the conference. Like, that's pretty crazy, the fact that he did that at that program that had no tradition, no wins, nothing.
The one for me that I didn't see mentioned, I don't know that I maybe saw it mentioned once or twice, but was Mike Gundy. I think, like, when you consider the fact that you're in Oklahoma, you're already number two in your own state always. And they went, he's only had two losing seasons in 20 years. Last year, unfortunately, and then his first year. But outside of that, 8 double-digit win seasons. Like, he is one who's consistently won when, you know, Texas is right there. And all these teams that are around him and even in his own state. And it's not like Oklahoma has recruits out the wazoo. So, that's one for me that gets the underrated belt.
You mentioned Frank Beamer too. Frank Beamer turned that program into something which was really bad, and did it with, I mean, recruiting the state of Virginia, defense and special teams, and getting that place rocking with an awesome atmosphere, and then throwing in Vicks and D'Angelo Halls and like just some elite recruiting in that area, and built a program that was, you know, built something out of nothing. Howard Schnellenberger, I just saw. Was one.
Yeah. A lot of great ones. A lot of great mentions.
Somebody said Nick Saban doesn't get enough credit. What?
I didn't get that one. I will say the best one. Well, the funniest one. That Lance Harbor at West Canaan High School does not get enough credit for taking over the Coyotes at halftime when the other coach left.
That's fantastic. That's pretty good.
I mean, the oop de oop. Like, you see so many college, it's actually a thing now. If you, those of a certain age should know what I'm talking about in terms of the movie.
Those old people know what you're talking about.
I still remember going to the theater and watching that, like most of our football team.
Oh yeah.
All took her girlfriends and went to that game. All right. So finishing up a little bit of, this is off, it's the off season. So we're finding these fun topics, a little bit of message board roulette. I obviously work for Rivals, so there's the message boards, and there's a great Twitter account, Message Board Geniuses, that takes all the stuff that people put on the message board. Like, for example, Carson Beck with his cars getting stolen here recently, and people putting comments about that, about getting picked off again. So, like, just funny stuff like that. Or, that his cars went into the transfer portal. Just all these great things. But things come from that. So good topics from it. So I'm going to go quick three quick things for you to finish up.
Okay.
What's your Waffle House order?
I don't eat at Waffle House.
Back in the day, DP, Waffle House order. Don't give me – I know current.
Okay. The fat kid DP would have absolutely gone – you always go waffle, And that, at that point in my life, it was definitely with butter and syrup, because I was large and in charge. But I was definitely the hash brown guy with, I liked them covered. I like the cheese. I like hash browns with cheese and the waffle. That's what I always got.
Do you remember the first time I went to Waffle House?
Yeah, I went with you.
We were there. That would be
my favorite. That was my favorite, because Brent's wife is a little bit of a germaphobe, and like, to watch her in the Waffle House, it was fantastic. Like, she was like, maybe I might, nah, okay. Do you remember what I did to her, by the way? Do you remember?
Yes, I remember. I very vividly remember that. Very much.
You want to tell the people?
I think you licked the floor.
Yeah, we share stories here. Like, I dropped something, I think, on the floor and rubbed it on the floor and ate it, because she was so like grossed out, and that made it so much better, because you should have seen her face. It was fantastic.
The hockey game's 1-1 for those who care, and we will be watching it. It's only in the second period, so like, we got plenty of time to watch the hockey game.
USA.
I will say, like, for me, like, I didn't grow up in the South. So Waffle House wasn't really a big thing for me. I can tell you my order at Tudor's, because we've talked about Tudor's Biscuit World and how Marshall uses it, and it's NIL. I'd get a Ron, which is a sausage, egg, and cheese, and then a Mary B, which is a bacon, egg, and cheese. Okay. Second question.
That Davey would have liked that, I think.
Yeah. There's members of my family who cannot believe that I can actually eat two of those things and be able to, you know, move the rest of the day. But anyway, it's just, I like those, that breakfast is fun for me. All right. Best golf trip.
Oh, by me?
Yeah.
Oh, Cypress Point. Cypress Point was the prettiest place I've ever seen in my life. Like, that was.
Talk to me. Where is this place? I have no idea.
Cypress Point is in California. It's next to Pebble. It's next to Spanish Bay. It's next to Spyglass. I've played Augusta, and I think Augusta is absolutely gorgeous. Been there several times. It's beautiful. It's amazing. It's a great place to play. The history and stuff like that is crazy. But like, Cypress was the strangest place I've ever played, because the first six holes were like Augusta. The next six were in the mountains and in the desert. Like, the desert was it was fairway, Brent, and sand. Like, sand everywhere. And then the next six were on the ocean. Like, it was absolutely gorgeous. One of the most surreal, it looked like Avatar the movie, places I've ever been to.
How'd you shoot?
83, which is actually pretty good for me.
I mean, daggone.
When you have a caddy, it really makes your life a lot better.
You still walk?
100%.
Yeah, I figured. All right, what are you binge watching right now?
Me and the wife have been watching Lincoln Lawyer. It's fantastic. Okay. Like, all right, so I'll let you in on a little something. Like, I can't handle the cussing, and I don't like cursing all the time, and I just don't like Yellowstone is fantastic, but there's too many curse words and too much craziness. Yeah, that's Cypress Point, the most beautiful place on the planet. But it's awesome. Humor, not a ton of cursing, but a bunch of quick-witted, great storytelling, great characters, like Lincoln Lawyer. What are you guys watching?
I have 800 jobs. I don't really watch. I watch
I don't have time for television, you people.
Well, I did tell someone the other day, like, for me, that's probably why I've more gravitated to movies in my watching TV sort of lifetime, because I know that's an hour and a half or 2 hours, and then I move on. Versus you get involved in the show. Now, we watched The Outer Banks, like, on Netflix. I know we all watched that. That was one that came up. But yeah, other than that, I just watch sports. Like, and if there's nothing on, I just find the channel that has the Fast and the Furious movie that's on, because there's one on every night.
And you love just those.
Background noise. It's background noise for me, but most of the time. I'm working while the background noise. So last thing. Oh, I guess in terms of college football news, did you see that no spring game at Texas or USC?
It's a trend that Matt Rhule started that's going to quickly be picked up on.
It's going to become the norm.
Yes.
Last question. Did you see what Georgia's baseball closer did in the game against Kennesaw?
I did.
I know you're always talking about that, but were you yay or nay on that one? For those who don't know, Georgia's baseball closer getting rated. It's two strikes, last batter. That's what turns around the guy at second base and like sticks his tongue out at him and then turns those pitch to end the game.
He sticks his tongue out in the stretch and then throws. It looked like a curveball, Brent. Am I correct? Looked a little curvy.
Yeah.
Brent, it's freaking February. Like, and here's my ignorance. Is Kennesaw State really good?
I mean, they're solid. Yeah, very solid program.
Okay, I just, like, to me, I love when people show emotion. I appreciate that. I love people that love their job and that have that emotion and passion that runs through them. But, like, it's February and it was Kennesaw State. I was like, yeah, I'm not going to lie. I wasn't digging it.
There was some back and forth, I guess, that maybe prompted some of that. I don't know.
Okay. I'm here for the chippiness, too. I like that. Yeah. I like – if y'all have listened to us, I'm here for petty. Like, I like petty.
So, does – liking petty, does – well, does that mean when you play the Three Blind Mice music when the umpires are making calls at a youth baseball game, does that qualify as petty? Do you know anybody that does that?
100 million percent. So let y'all in on this and then we'll take off. Yes. The only way that baseball was really fun for me was with our kids. Brent loves baseball. His boys love baseball. He coached my son growing up and like, it's miserable. The tournaments are long. You spend the whole weekend at the ballpark. Like I'd rather punch myself in between my legs than do that crap over and over and over again. But the saving grace was, I had the speaker box
.
I had all the sayings. There's no crying in baseball. And I had the kids get on there and say their sayings, get dirty, all the different things. And one of them was Three Blind Mice. And when the refs
Jeopardy would, music.
Yeah. When they would do a bad job of making a call and then come together, we would play the Three Blind Refs and it would be fantastic because I'm petty and it was the only way to keep myself entertained. And I was shocked.
The walk up music.
Oh, the walk-up music was fantastic. I was shocked how many people got mad at us. Like, they legit got mad at us for our speaker box. I'm like, listen, I'm here because of the speaker box, okay? I don't want to watch my son play. I'm just here because the speaker box is more fun than watching the game of baseball that is absolutely putting me to sleep. So, yes, very petty, which is probably why I like petty. But That was a good closing by you. That was a good show. Like, listen, if you guys want to tune in, man, like we're going to do the work for you in the off season. Like we're going to look for teams that are under the radar and coaches and stories. And, you know, we're going to talk to McShay and talk to Daniel Jeremiah. And we're going to talk to a ton of coaches like Matt Rule. I promise I'm texting with him and he's going to come on and we'll talk to the different coaches at the different big programs and keep you posted on the off season, everything college football. Cause that's what me and Brent Rollins do. That's what we love. So you guys keep tuning in.